Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Another episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. This is the podcast where we watch movies we probably should have seen by this point in our lives. And joining me for this episode is Mr. Lee Hutchison. Lee, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thank you very much for having me back on again. I had such a good time last time. So I think we've been looking for any excuse to discover movies that we've not watched. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is perfect because I feel like I kind of dropped the ball a bit. I should have been more on top of this. But The Big Lebowski, this year marks its 20th anniversary. It celebrated its 20th anniversary. I don't know when this episode will be out, but I think a couple weeks ago, mid-March. And I was kind of like, oh my God, I didn't even realize it. This is one of my favorite movies. It's one of my favorite comedies, if not my favorite comedy. And it's maybe my favorite Coen Brothers movie. And when you told me you hadn't seen it, I was like, this is destiny. We have to watch The Big Lebowski.
I know, exactly. I think we have it's been touched on in some of the other podcasts. We have a Nerd Party group chat, and it's amazing. Like, you could have a drinking game of anytime anyone says, I've never seen that movie, or that I've never got around to that one, I think everyone always goes, Missing Frames?
Exactly. It's perfect. And it's a great excuse to watch these movies too. So this is fantastic. But I love this movie. I adore it. And it's funny because the first time I ever saw it, I want to say it was like I had just graduated from high school. So this is probably around 2006-7. And first time I saw it, I hated it. I thought it was one of the worst movies I'd ever seen. I didn't think it was funny. I didn't understand what the appeal was. And it just did not click with me at all. And I don't really need to go back to it. I don't know why I did. I can't remember exactly why, but I did go back and watch it again. And the second time I watched it, I kind of enjoyed it a little bit more. I was like, all right, okay, I kind of get this. And by the third and fourth time I'd seen it, it was just like, I was like, okay, I'm completely on board. This is one of the best things I've ever seen. And it's really, you rarely find that with comedies, I feel like. Like, once you've seen it once, you're like, all right, I got all the jokes. It never quite hits the same way. The Big Lebowski is almost the opposite in a way. It's kind of the brilliance of the Coen brothers, is they've made a comedy that you have to kind of watch again and again to really appreciate. And it gets funnier every time I see it. But I almost want to prep you in a way where it is one of those movies where I feel like you have to already be a fan of the characters and you have to already be a fan of the movie before you can really enjoy it. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. It's one of these movies that I've been so aware of. And I had mentioned that I'd never seen the movie when we were chatting about the 20th anniversary, one of my local pubs next to one cinema I'm a regular in is called Lebowski's. It's got a picture of the dude, see, I know that, outside, and it does White Russians. It's a favourite drink of mine, a staple. And it's one of these ones that at the Glasgow Film Festival, and we did a podcast on it, they were doing a sort of an interactive screening of Big Lebowski, where it was going to be set out, you were going to do bowling first, have some White Russians, and then there was going to be an opportunity to watch the movie afterwards. And it sort of never fell for me to go along to that event. So it's one of these movies that, like, I'm aware that I need to watch. I'm a Coen Brothers fan. I don't know if I can really get away with calling myself a Coen Brothers fan and not having seen this movie. So it feels like I'm long overdue finally watching it and bringing together my loves of bowling, White Russians, and my local bar.
Yeah, this feels like it's right up your alley. That's a bowling reference, ladies and gentlemen. But I was going to ask, so you're a Coen Brothers fan. Like,
yes.
So were people kind of trying to, like, egg you on into watching this? Like, how did you miss it? Like, what was it about it? Like, was there something that just you were like, just not into it? Or what is your kind of history with it?
Sometimes I always think with these things that it was almost the same with sort of Indiana Jones, when I never really watched the trilogy until last year. I always think, you know what, I'll catch it when it gets shown at a retro screening night or something like that. And it's happened once or twice, and for whatever reason, I've never been able to make it along to that event. And it's always one of those things like, oh, I'll catch it at the cinema. It's like one of those movies, it's so big, it's so good, by people's account, well, I got to watch it in the best possible way. And then just sometimes you a movie like that just falls through the cracks. Like, you're waiting forever for the best moment to watch it, and then it just never kind of happens. And that's really been it for me. It's just kind of, not laziness, but not the right moments come. So, you know, I've mentioned it to a few friends. Oh, I've never seen that one. And it's like, oh, yeah, you would love it. You know, when I mentioned it to Tristan, he was like, how have you, of all people, never seen it? And it's just... Time has come officially.
There we go. Well, it's beautiful. I'm glad we get to capture this moment for all eternity on the internet, this moment where it's revealed. But I love one of the things I love about the Coen brothers is how they kind of effortlessly move between genres, between moods. They can do slapstick, they can do serious drama. Their career started that way. I mean, they had Blood Simple, that was their first big debut, and they followed that up with Raising Arizona. And Blood Simple is, like, for those who haven't seen it, very dark thriller, very intense, very dramatic. And Raising Arizona, for those who haven't seen it, is completely bonkers and ridiculous. Kind of, I think, a little bit more standard for what your general moviegoer would expect from the Coen brothers based on their more popular movies. But The Big Lebowski is almost a continuation of that trend, where the previous year or their previous film was Fargo, which is like they got nominated for every category in the Oscars they could have been nominated for. I think they won for writing. I don't know. I don't think they won directing, but it was funny that they did this. They're kind of breakthrough Oscar caliber movie. So now everyone's like, oh, the Coen brothers, they're very serious filmmakers. And then they immediately follow it up with The Big Lebowski, which is the complete opposite. It's bonkers. It has little to no plot. A lot of people really didn't like it when it first came out because they were kind of expecting Fargo again. And what they got is this very kind of slacker stoner comedy that doesn't have a driving plot, that doesn't really accomplish anything. And, I kind of love that about the Coen brothers. I love that they keep their audiences on edge. At any point, you can expect anything from them. But where do you stand on the Coen brothers in general? Are you a fan of theirs? Or, like, what's your pick if someone asked you what your favorite Coen brothers movie was?
Yeah, they're one of these ones. I think they've got such a diverse range of movies that you can get away with dipping in and out of them. That I think with someone like Wes Anderson, I will religiously see all of his movies every time I can.
Right.
And with a Coen Brothers movie, I'll go, oh, I need to go along and see that one straight away, or I maybe miss it. And I think it's not a big deal. Like, I tend to kind of see them all at the cinema. Like Raising Arizona, a movie you touched on there, that's one I've not had the chance to see yet.
Oh, so good.
But Fargo is one of my all-time favorite movies, so I'm really excited to see how they did, in fact, follow up Fargo. So I'm curious about that one. And yeah, it's they're really interesting directors. They're diverse. You know, No Country for Old Men is fantastic. Mm. Hail Caesar, I wasn't a fan of at all. I can pick or choose them, but when we click, it's love.
It's love. It's a beautiful thing. So yes. Anticipation levels for this movie. Are you excited to watch it again or watch it for the first time?
Well, I just don't really have much of an opinion on it because I don't really know the plot or much in really anything about it. I know the bits and pieces. So I'm more kind of curious than anything. I don't think like, oh, I'm excited to finally watch this. I'm like, right, let's finally see what this kind of mystery movie is all about.
Oh, that's great. That's the way it should be. So correct. I say, let's do it. Let's go and watch The Big Lebowski.
Let's put it in the tape recorder.
Now available to own on video cassette.
Welcome back. We've watched the Big Lebowski, not the Little Lebowski, the Big Lebowski. And Lee, it's 20 years since this film was released. 20 years later, you've finally seen it. What do you think?
Yeah, I really liked it, and I'm annoyed at myself for having waited so long. It's not as bad as John Mills never having seen a before trilogy movie, because there's three of them, but I feel pretty bad that I've waited this long to watch that. I've again, it was like one of these movies that I knew I would like or enjoy and kind of hope to see it on the big screen, and it's kind of always just passed me by, or I didn't want to go to watch it and do bowling at the same time. So I'm glad that I finally had an excuse to see it, and yet we're here now. So yeah, thank you for kicking me up the bum.
No, thank you. Thank you for not seeing it so we could use it as an excuse for this Missing Frames episode. Yeah. I feel like it was all worth it just for that. But
absolutely.
Okay, awesome. So you enjoyed it. And was it kind of like, did it fall in line with what you were expecting? What was kind of, as you were watching it, at what point were you kind of like, all right, I'm good to go with this. I'm on board. I'm ready.
Yeah, I was into it pretty quickly. With this, like, I kind of mentioned before, I've sort of kept myself really isolated on this movie because I was like, well, one day I'm going to see it, and this movie, I want it to be a surprise. Like, I knew about the White Russian element, and I knew that there was bowling involved. Otherwise, I knew next to nothing. I didn't really know. I knew about the dude's kind of persona of his, like, kind of laid-back hippie.
Right.
I didn't know about John Goodman's character, really, all in all. I forgot Steve Buscemi was involved in it. Didn't know there was a sort of crime element involved in it. So you know, what I actually knew about this movie, you could have kind of written on the back of a fag packet.
Sure.
If that, maybe a match. So yeah, this was a real surprise in terms of what it actually was and what it kind of, how good it was.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I think one of the things that really took me aback and took audiences and critics aback at the time, you mentioned the crime plotline, and it's just so funny watching this movie every time, and the more I watch it, the more I appreciate it. But the first time I was like, what's the point of this? What is the there's nobody solving anything. The dude has no clue what's going on. It's almost like, basically, when you sit down to write a script, there are certain rules you have to meet. Your character has to be motivated. You have to have a connection to what's going on. You have to have a goal in mind. And, you know, there has to be a character arc. Like, your character should change by the end of the movie. It's almost like the Coen brothers sat down, looked at a rule book, and said, okay, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. We're just going to do the exact opposite of it. And I think people were kind of like, why nothing? None of this means anything. It's so funny watching it now that I've kind of been able to wrap my head around it and see how brilliant the Coen brothers really were when they were making this. Just having this kind of like indifferent character being caught up in this very complex like crime plot line. And it goes all over the place, all these different, like, characters are involved, there are different groups of people involved, and they all have varying levels of involvement with this whole thing. This guy, you know, the Big Lebowski, his wife has been taken away from him and kidnapped, and everyone is involved somehow, but the dude is just caught up in the middle of it, and he doesn't really care. I mean, he's concerned at certain points, but at other points he's just kind of like, whatever. Like, I just love that so much. Was that, like, watching it, was it something where you were kind of experiencing the same thing where you're like, where is all this going? And then when it gets to the end and you find out, like, oh, that's it. Wait, what? What was that like watching it for the first time?
Yeah, for me, like, I'm almost going to be complete probably reversal to most people that had probably watched this movie and another one, but it reminded me a lot of kind of Inherent Vice by Thomas Pynchon, done by Paul Thomas Anderson. So kind of to describe how I kind of came to Big Lebowski and kind of sort of overcame that, and like, Paul Thomas Anderson is one of my favorite filmmakers. I adore him, and I went to see Inherent Vice, not really, had never read the book, or I like thought, oh, these trailers are brilliant, looks like another good Paul Thomas Anderson movie. And I watched it, and at the beginning, and you've got kind of Joaquin Phoenix's character Doc. He's like a stoner hippie private investigator who gets caught up in this kidnapping and crime story, and I thought, right, okay, we'll follow this thread. And then it kind of stops or picks up and other things are going on. You don't really know what's going on. I'm watching going, this doesn't make any sense. And I just became frustrated and somewhat disappointed with the movie. So I never really had the chance to kind of revisit Inherent Vice, or I wasn't in much of a rush to do it. But I always heard from people that were like, with Inherent Vice, don't pay attention to the story. Just pay attention to this through line of the Doc character and what happens with him, and you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
So with, obviously, Phantom Thread came out a few months ago, I had the chance again to see Inherent Vice at the cinema, So I kind of went in with that mindset of like, I was disappointed, but I'm just going to relax in my chair, kind of go with it, and just watch what happens with him, kind of follow the performances. And as I was kind of watching The Big Lebowski, when at the beginning you've got the dude becomes involved with The Big Lebowski, there's this threat, and then the ultimate kidnapping, you think, right, here's my thread, this is what I'm going with. And then that kind of drops quite quickly and other things start coming in. I'm like, oh man, this is like Inherent Vice, a movie that's not going to be out for another 15 years. I know how to deal with this. And I would just watch the performance of the actors and go, right, I'm actually really enjoying this. And it's not a problem that I'm like, am I thick here? Am I losing the plot? And that really helped me, you know, for watching this movie the first time to really go into it. Had I watched this movie without Inherent Vice, I think I perhaps would have struggled on an initial viewing. So I feel like I've kind of benefited from kind of watching another movie first and then coming into this.
Yeah, I had the same vibe when I saw Inherent Vice. I was thinking like, oh, this is like a less funny, like less manic version of The Big Lebowski, but very similar in terms of a slacker character, not really sure what's going on, but like constantly in the middle of just these insane, complex issues and ridiculous things happening. But it's funny. Like I said, the first time I saw this, I didn't like it. The humor didn't click with me, and I think it's this movie, and we can kind of talk a little bit more about it now. I didn't want to spoil anything for you in the pre-show, but it's funny how there's so much of this humor is subtle. Like, the things that I laugh at now are very small character moments, and so much of the humor for me, it comes from just loving the characters so much and how dedicated these actors are to their parts. I mean Jeff Bridges is absolutely brilliant, but I absolutely love John Goodman, who I think is one of the great actors of our time. Somebody's gonna realize this someday, that John Goodman is like the top of the top. And I think Walter might be my favorite character, honestly, because it's funny, my wife and I have been watching Roseanne all the way through for the first time, which is a show I never expected I would love, but I do love it. And it's great to just watch him in that and to have in the back of my mind movies like The Big Lebowski, which is apparently, John Goodman has said this is his favorite film that he's ever done, and I can't blame him at all. But there are like little moments of humor that you don't really notice the first time through. It reminds me a lot of Arrested Development, where Arrested Development has a lot of broad slapstick humor moments. And then you watch it again and again, and you start to pick up on the more subtle stuff and the things that they kind of planted in there for rewatching. And one of the things that I love, this isn't related to Walter, John Goodman's character, but Philip Seymour Hoffman, who, again, is another one of my absolute favorite characters, and he plays Brant, the Big Lebowski's assistant. But there's one part where he's talking about the little Lebowski achievers, and he's explaining it to the dude, and he says, he's talking about like, oh, these are children without the necessary means for a higher education. But the way he doesn't take a breath and he just repeats himself is so subtle and quick, but when I caught on to it, I thought it was one of the funniest things ever. But I wonder, you know, the first view, did you pick up on the subtle humor, or were you kind of, as far as the jokes that really hit home for you, what are the ones that you think when you're telling people about this movie you would quote to them?
I think for me, like, I can't quite, like, I couldn't quote something off the top of my head right now. I think for me, like, you kind of go into a movie like this and it's like, there's so much kind of coming over you. You're like, you're trying to process, oh, was this the movie I expected, or was it not? Right, okay, I'm not to pay real attention to the kind of plot as such, I'm to go along with the characters. And it was just sort of just like, kind of going with it as an experience for the first time, that I would kind of class this as sort of a roller coaster experience for me, that I kind of got on and I knew I was going to enjoy the ride and I just went with it. Whereas and before you knew it, the film was over and I was like, oh, that was a really good, you know, 100 minutes. Whereas I think if I watched it again, I could pick up on so many little kind of moments or quotes. It just, every scene with Walter, for example, had me cracked up. I thought he was my favorite character of the movie. But like one kind of small thing that always seemed to crack me up was when Brant would leave like a voicemail, for example, on, like, there would just be like the dude just kicking back and there would be Brant, as you say, sort of breathless, just leaving this voicemail to like, could you please get in contact with me? And it was just little moments like that I thought It was such great character performances. You know, Maude Lebowski, that sort of regal way she carried herself. Yeah, and it was just such an enjoyable movie with like a great cast of characters, and I really like just going with it, and I'm excited to, on a repeat viewing, dive into it and go, right, that's a bit I love. Whereas like the same with something like Fargo, for example. You know, I watched Fargo the first time, you know, years ago, and I thought, yeah, this was such a good film. But it's one of these movies I've constantly gone back to, and any time I watch it, I pick up on other little things, different things, favourite moments or beats, and I think The Big Lebowski is going to become a movie like that for me as well, that it's going to be, you know, maybe every year, 18 months, I'm going to put it on if it's on Netflix, something like that, watch it, and get more out of it. And I'd heard it was a bit of a divisive movie to some people, or whether that was more true in the past. For me, I didn't see a divisive movie at all. I saw something that I can already tell I want to dive into to again.
That's kind of the brilliance of the Coen brothers, and something it was really in my film school years that I kind of really started to attune myself to their wavelength and really appreciate how they work. Because so many of their movies that I've seen, even when I know I enjoyed them on some level, so many of them need repeat viewings for you to fully appreciate it. I think I could honestly probably count on one hand the amount of Coen Brothers movies I've seen once that I knew I loved. Like No Country for Old Men is one of them, but things like The Big Lebowski, things like Fargo, almost every movie I've seen, Inside Llewyn Davis, all these movies, A Serious Man, for me, I've had to kind of sit with them a little bit and then come back to them. And only then, once you've kind of wrapped your head around them a little bit and you can kind of appreciate what they're doing and what they were trying to do. Because so much of their stuff is so, like, they kind of take you in unexpected places. Like, with The Big Lebowski coming so soon after Fargo, you're kind of expecting a payoff or something to mean something. And then at the end, it's just like, well, no, the dude abides. And you're kind of like, what does that mean? What? That's it? But then you think about it, and you're like, that's the whole point of this movie. The whole point of this movie is that sentence, the dude abides. He's, no matter what they throw at him, you have this character who is, as Sam Elliott's stranger character says, is like kind of a hero for his time. No matter what life throws at him, he's just pressing forward. And even as the stress gets to him, and even as these terrible, insane things are happening, he's just who he is. And he never compromises that. He never forfeits who he truly is. And I remember, as I was kind of going back through and watching it again and again, I was like, that's absolutely brilliant. This whole movie, its thesis statement is the dude abides. And I mean, I love Jeff Bridges so much. It's so funny because he used his own clothes for the wardrobe. I mean, that he basically just raided his closet and got his own clothing. He still has those flip-flops. I think to this day, he still wears them. But he didn't even need a lot of direction from the Coen brothers. Basically, apparently, according to both the Coen brothers and Jeff Bridges, his main direction was he would walk up to them and say, hey, do you think the dude smoked a J before this scene? And they'd say either yes or no. And if the answer was yes, Jeff Bridges would just go off into a corner and rub his eyes and get them all bloodshot and come back. And that was it. That was the extent of his direction. That's how brilliant Jeff Bridges is. He's a beautiful man.
Yeah. Like I was very surprised with like going into a Coen Brothers movie and I think like I was curious to know, like I was expecting like maybe a hint of darkness or something like that, or a morally suspect kind of character. And I think with like the dude, like it wasn't like that at all. He was like just this, as you say, really easygoing character, and you just go with him. There's, you know, he gets all this money, and it never seems to cross his mind that he could make this as like a kind of fraud or rip people off or do anything other than the right thing.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really good that you have this, you know, it's maybe a rare kind of Coen Brothers movie where like the main character's good deeds are pushing the movie. It's driving the movie on, and it's some of the people around him that are looking to kind of appeal to maybe sort of his more darker sides or sinister sides that we never see any sign of ever existing. It's just, and he's very relaxed about these things when it kind of they maybe unfold, where like the money's gone missing, whereas like you can imagine a Coen Brothers movie, like, oh my god, where's the money gone, and like an escalation, you know, violent escalation comes from there, whereas it just seems to sort of amble about to that you know, £1 million or whatever the total was to him, it's gone, okay, right, it wasn't meant to be, almost. And then it's I like that a lot, whereas you'd get maybe Walter, that's maybe why I kind of found him to be my favorite character, was that he gives in to those temptations, you know, the bit where he thinks this young kid has bought like this sports car with his name, and he's got the suit on, and he immediately starts smashing it up, and it's like, whereas the dude is just completely relaxed about it, whether that's his behavior or, you know, this approach to it. And I like that, as you say, the dude abides.
I know, I love, I just, is this your homework, Larry? And I love... I mean, Walter's he's the perfect anti-dude, but he has his own kind of like laid back personality. Even though Walter he's way more high strung, he also is kind of at peace with himself. And it's the same, you know. Then you have Donnie, played by Steve Buscemi, in the background, just kind of there. And but all three of them are so comfortable in their own skin, and they're so at peace with who they are. I love that, and I mean Walter bringing everything back to Vietnam when, you know, everything is always about Nam. Like when their bowling friend is he stepped over the line, and he's like, no, that's market zero, it's you stepped over the line, and he's like, no, I didn't, and he goes, Smokey, this is not Nam, this is bowling, there are rules. And then the same thing with Larry, when, you know, is this your homework, Larry, have you ever heard of Vietnam? And then finally the dude confronts him at the end of the movie, he's like, what does anything have to do with Vietnam? I love that, though. I love that Walter, again, just like the dude, he's an uncompromising character. No character betrays who they are in this movie. They're constant throughout, which in any other movie is almost a complaint. You want characters to change. Mm-hmm. You want them to develop. But I think in a case where you have characters so well written and so, like, just perfectly detailed and such great performances, you can almost make an excuse for it. And I mean, it works perfectly in this movie. You don't feel like, oh my God, I wish there had been some development. Or maybe you do the first time you see it. I know I did. But like watching it more and more, I've come to appreciate how static everybody is. Nobody really changes, but everybody is so, like, they feel so real and genuine that you absolutely adore it.
And I think that's true to life in a way, that like there is some extraordinary moments, perhaps like being involved in a sort of a kind of drop off with money, but like kind of their reality is very sort of grounded to an extent. Like there's no mass murders taking place, there are no serial killers, they're not assassins, like they're just a kind of laid back guy in a Vietnam vet that like bowling,
right?
And like there's nothing about like, there's nothing in the kind of plot which is really going to change those kind of people. Like the dude abides, that this kind of laid back character, it's going to take a hell of a lot to get him, to push him into that kind of world where things have been shaken up. Whereas like Walter, that's already happened with Vietnam. I can't imagine perhaps what he was like beforehand. Maybe he was similar to the dude. Maybe that's where their connection was from, and then he's sort of been changed by that. You know, Donnie is a laid back character. Maude and, you know, the Big Lebowski, you know, all these people are true to themselves, and it would take a lot to actually shake that kind of lifestyle.
Yeah.
So I think that's true, that it, you know, what you see in films, it, you know, people, not a normal person goes about the day and then someone's murdered and then they're like a Liam Neeson style character, whereas these people, you know, they're such strong personalities anyway, anything that would kind of take them away from that would probably be a betrayal of who they are, or would need to be something that would take place over a longer period of time.
Yeah. And it's funny that if we're going to say there is an antagonist in this movie, or like a force that's working against them, it would be the nihilists. And it's funny that they happen to be nihilists. So the only big antagonist in this film that is causing any level of threat are nihilists. They don't care. They don't believe in anything. I think that, again, is perfectly in tune with the movie's theme of like all these people who are just doing their own thing, and the main bad guys don't care about anything. Again, it's like you can look at it and say, this is not anyone who would read this script, like a film professor or like somebody who, a producer anyone else would have looked at this and said, this doesn't work because nothing happens in this film and nobody cares about anything. And yet it all works brilliantly. And I think so much of that has to do with the Coen brothers, but also so much of it has to do with the actors themselves. But what to you encapsulates The Big Lebowski? After this first viewing, what is the moment that really stands out in your mind as like, yeah, that really made the movie for me?
I think it was just like, it was almost one of those moments, like anytime Walter was on the screen, I couldn't wait to get those two back together again.
I know, yeah, I'm the same, yeah.
And when I was watching it, like, not that I didn't enjoy the scenes with the dude, but like, you've got the dude kind of will flow through a scene and like, he'll end up on like an adult film set, or he'll be in this kind of mansion with the Big Lebowski. And like, it's really quite interesting to see him kind of just floating through it, and we're like that as well. All right, this is quite interesting. Oh, okay. And then when Walter kind of comes in, it's then you've kind of got the kind of kickoff from all that. Like, things are quite absurd that are going on. There's kidnappings, there's hitmen coming in and chucking like an animal into a bath, and it's like, wow, this is crazy. And then when it kind of gets to Walter, we kind of get the payoff of the absurdity of the movie by his responses. And
yes.
I kept thinking the whole time that, you know, only 4 years previously I went to watch John Goodman play Fred Flintstone in the Flintstone movie as a kid.
Yeah.
And it was crazy to think, like, as a kid, like, I associated John Goodman with Fred Flintstone and maybe sort of seen Roseanne on daytime TV here and there. I never thought of him as, oh, he's this kind of character that will kind of be a serious actor. So when I would see him in sort of serious roles, I was like, John Goodman does serious movies too? Like, no, he's a comedian. So like, nowadays it's something we're all kind of used to, whereas kind of now looking back on The Big Lebowski, if I was old enough to have gone from, say, Flintstones to this, I would have found that quite shocking. So I really liked sort of any time those two were together. It was just my favorite bit, the energy between the two, you know, a veteran and a hippie that are united together. It reminded me also of Inherent Vice, I guess, a bit. So
I know, yeah, I love any moment where they're together. I love John Turturro in this movie. He has such a small part as the Jesus, but it's one of the funniest, like, again, one of those moments of humor that completely caught me off guard when rewatching it, is the whole thing where they talk about how, like, oh, he was busted for molesting 8-year-olds. And then he comes up to them at the bowling alley and does his whole speech about, like, how if you try to pull anything with me, I'm going to, you know, shove the gun up your you-know-what and all that stuff. And they're just kind of like, wow. And then he's like, that's right, man. And he walks off. And the only reaction is Walter going, 8-year-olds, dude. It's so funny. This movie is so rewarding rewatching it. I love that. To me, is absolutely brilliant. Not a lot of comedies. I feel like when you watch a comedy, even the great ones, you kind of watch it once and you get all the jokes, you get all the humor. But like, there's something absolutely brilliant about a comedy that you can go back to and feel like rewarded for going back and finding these little hidden gems and character moments. For me, I remember when the first time I saw it, the only thing I thought was funny was Jesus, that character. But like, man, I couldn't, we'd be here all day if I had to go through and talk about all my favorite moments. The is this your homework, Larry scene is great. There's
good.
Also this hysterical moment. It's one of my favorite moments in the movie when the dude goes back to Maud's place to kind of confront her and talk with her a little bit more. And David Thewlis is there, and he's just like, he's like this weird, like, giggling guy just reading a magazine on the couch. And he keeps like saying things to the dude, and the dude's like, okay. And then finally he's like, they both, like, him and Maud start giggling and laughing, and the dude's like, who is this guy? What is he? And I feel like that's like, that could sum up the entire movie, or the audience reaction to the entire movie, which is like, who is this person? Why does this matter? Why is this happening? To me, that moment almost encapsulates the entire movie, just how ridiculous it is and how nothing makes sense. And this poor guy, the dude, is caught up in all these inane situations where he's just there, and everyone is like doing their own thing around him. They all have their own motivations. Another one of my favorites is when Maud comes in and he's on the floor and he looks up at her and he goes, Maud? And she goes, Jeffrey, love me. And she takes off her robe and his reaction is, hey, that's my robe. And that's it. Again, like, all these things that I never would have picked up on the first time I watch it. Every time I watch it, I find it funnier and funnier.
I just, yeah, as I say, I just find the moment where, like, he's in the where he's in the cafe at the end, and he's, like, accusing people of being, like, anti-Semites, and I find that, like, I was just bursting away in laughter, and, like, the dude was like, no, come on, let's leave, and he's just, like, it's just, again, he just keeps ratcheting it up, and it clearly had nothing to do with any kind of reality whatsoever, so,
right.
No, I enjoyed that moment quite a lot.
Another one of my favorite quotes is, at the end of his whole rant, he goes, I'm staying. I'm finishing my coffee. Mm.
And I was quite surprised by, like, Steve Buscemi, because we always probably associate him with, like, being the motor mouth, you know, obviously from something like Fargo as well. And
right.
Obviously in this movie, like, he's got a boy band haircut, like, sort of the curtain hair, and he's just, like, really quiet, quite innocent, like, oh, what's going on here? And stuff, like, when they're looking for, like, where the car has vanished off to, and
yeah.
He's just kind of like, what were you saying there about, like, pants and stuff? Whose pants? And it's like, there's all this talk of, like, millions of pounds, and it's like, no.
Right, the best quote, again, one of the best quotes in the movie, just constantly, shut the f*** up, Donnie, all the time. I mean, that I think is everyone's go-to, but it's so funny, and part of the joke about that, it was almost an inside joke for the Coen brothers, because, like you said, he's such a chatterbox in Fargo that their joke was, let's put him as a character who's constantly being told to shut up, and nobody will let him talk. Yeah, I can't say enough good things about this movie, and I would almost encourage people who have only seen it the once and were like, didn't really click for me, I would really encourage them to go back and watch it again, and I don't really see, so you think you're gonna,
oh, definitely
revisit
100%.
It
at times? Yeah, it's definitely up my street, and hopefully I will have a chance to see it in a sort of cinema venue at some point.
It's literally up your street. There's a bar near you.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah, the Lebowski's White Russian Bar. You know, I feel like I'm now entitled to actually go in there. You know, all those times I've had a White Russian in there,
right.
I feel like I deserve it. So when this episode comes out, I am going to, I don't know if they've got a Twitter account, but I am going to tweet them a link to this, and they better appreciate it. But another thing for me that kind of feels like it's sort of been the right time to watch it, that at the moment, like, Seinfeld is one of my favorite TV shows, and I've been introducing my girlfriend to that. And, you know, I was kind of like, she sort of comes from a Friends background, and I was like, well, kind of Seinfeld is a show about nothing. Mm. They are kind of just characters that never learn any lessons. Their relationships never really go anywhere. They are just individuals like that. Like, no hugging, no lessons was always the theory of that. So kind of watching The Big Lebowski after watching a couple of Seinfeld episodes over our dinner, I felt like it was like, oh, I'm so into this movie.
Right.
Like, no one ever learns anything. Nothing happens. And it reminded me of another movie I love. Have you ever seen Adaptation?
Yeah, love that movie.
Yeah, because it reminds me of, like, when, like, it's about Charlie Kaufman, and he meets, like, this script writer Robert, and he's like, he was like, oh, I'm wanting to write a story where nothing much happens, where people don't change, they don't have any epiphanies, they struggle and are frustrated, and nothing is resolved. More of a reflection of the real world. And then, like, this Robert McKee guy just, like, goes through, and it's like, he just has this vile tirade, and then he goes, why the are you wasting two precious hours of my life? Do you
mean? Right.
I don't have use for it, and I don't have bloody use for you. Okay, thanks. And then it's like, I can imagine that being, like, with something like Big Lebowski, you know, the Coen brothers were sort of becoming, like, you know, these big names by this point, or kind of getting towards it, maybe bigger names for people like us. But I think when you watch this, and there's so many scenes, whether it's, like, the hallucination scene, or, as we've discussed, nothing much really happens. You know, Fargo, it takes a while to kind of the plot to almost begin, and then it is a very kind of not conventional plot as such, but it is this sort of heist movie, and, well, kidnap movie, and, you know, things escalate out of control. Whereas this, you can imagine people sitting down and going, could we get rid of the hallucination scene, or could we have, you know, some response to this, or, you know, even sort of, you know, what is actually going on here? And, like, the fact that they, in 1998, were able to come out with this movie, and I very find it hard to believe there was many production notes or advisors kind of chipping in on this to make them change it. And I think this is, like, an incredible representation of the Coens' vision, and I don't see anything that's been trampled with, touched, or kind of been cut away. I think it's really impressive. Maybe there's stuff that you know that I don't know, but I'm very surprised at it, and I'm really impressed.
That's what's amazing about it, is I think the Coen brothers are so mischievous and scheming in this way that I think they literally just use the traction of the fact that it's like, oh, we're Oscar winning filmmakers now. And everyone's like, oh, okay, yes, please. What do you want to make? What's your next masterpiece? And it's one of those things where you use the traction from your kind of award caliber status to basically make something like this. This is like a movie that only could have been made once they had the credibility to do so. Because, like you said, I think Robert McKee would tear this movie apart. You know, it's like, where's your conventional plot? Where's your characters? What are the people learning? What is driving the story? Nothing. Nothing drives anything. No character learns anything. Characters die for no reason. Characters show up and then disappear and are never heard from again. Whole scenes are like standalone. Like the "Where's your home?" Like, is this your homework, Larry? That that doesn't affect anything else in the movie. And yet these moments exist, and you can see someone like Robert McKee just shouting at them, like, "What are you? How dare you waste my time with this movie?" But it completely works. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, in the more I've learned about this, it is kind of funny that you bring it up, because I haven't really thought about whether or not the Coen brothers struggled to get this made, because they didn't. And I didn't even really think about it till this moment with you bringing it up. But it is amazing that you can kind of... I love them for that. I love them for the fact that they said, we just made our first Oscar-winning movie. We're going to use that as an excuse to make something that's going to completely throw people off our scent. Someone's going to be expecting some big follow-up, and we're going to make this slacker stoner comedy that's vulgar, that is pointless, and has like all these ridiculous, absurd, and kind of offensive characters and moments that is the polar opposite of an Oscar-caliber movie. But for me, that's why I think it's their best movie. That's why I love it so much, because they had the guts to go in and say, you know what, we're just going to make something that is the complete antithesis of what you would expect from people you associate with serious filmmaking, that they can go back and do something like this. And you've seen it all over their filmography, like I said, with Blood Simple and Raising Arizona. You can see it with No Country for Old Men, followed by Burn After Reading. It's the same kind of thing. They win all the Oscars for No Country for Old Men, and their follow-up is this absurd slapstick similar kind of comedy where you have these kind of screwball characters caught up in this whole like mysterious crime thriller, and they all behave extremely poorly. But how would you say, as far as like, if you were to look at their filmography now, does Big Lebowski make it into your top five, or do you think it's gonna need some more
100%.
Time?
Oh, yeah, simple as that. I think it's up there. Like, Fargo will always be number one. I can't see past that. But like, you know, I think with like what I quite like about the Coen brothers is that you don't have to like every single movie. That I you know, when you get to like the stage of like the Coens or Spielberg, Paul Thomas Anderson, like they make the movies like they want to make, and it's almost impossible for people with that to go like, I like every single one of them. Like, and I think with like the big the Coen brothers, they're now at that stage where like they have got so many movies. Like, if you love Fargo, I don't know if you'll like the Lady Killers or not, but if you like the Lady Killers, maybe you'll love something like Intolerable Cruelty. Or if you don't like Intolerable Cruelty, hey, No Country for Old Men's coming up soon. So like, they've got something for everyone, and I like that about them, that you can still have this sort of strong relationship and admire them, but you just acknowledge that some of these films aren't for you, some of them aren't for me. But The Big Lebowski is a film that is definitely for me. It's in the top tier.
It's like, once you're on board with the Coen brothers, you roll with the punches. And a movie like, for instance, A Serious Man, which I really enjoy, but it's not one of my favorites, but it's like one where I think if I wasn't a Coen brothers fan, I would have enjoyed it less. But because I'm willing to kind of sit with them a little bit and kind of work with them in a way, I'm willing to meet them halfway, because I think The Big Lebowski kind of trained me in that way. I think it kind of taught me that sometimes a film can't exist in a single viewing. Sometimes you can't just watch a movie and say, okay, I hate that, I'm done, I don't need it. It kind of taught me that sometimes you need to sit with a movie for a little bit. You need to watch it again. And movies that you're going to dismiss the first time around, you can come back to and say, oh my God, that's now one of my favorite movies. I feel like so many critics have come back and they hated The Big Lebowski the first time they saw it, and now they're like, I think it's one of their best movies. It's that's their brilliance. I love that. I think that's a perfect way to describe it. So I guess as far as final ratings go, I mean, there's so many great quotes to come up with for a final rating system. I'm going to go with, on a scale of 1 to 5 human paraquats, which, by the way, was apparently one of the only improvised lines in this movie, which is amazing because it feels so tossed off. But human paraquats, on a scale of 1 to 5, how many would you give it?
I would have to give it a 4 out of 5. I think that could change. That could go higher. But like, that's my first one. And it's that difficulty sometimes. And my girlfriend sneered at me for saying this the other day, that like, it's hard not to rate movies on a curve. If you like, it's like Coen Brother movies, like you're rating them almost compared to the other ones. Like, oh, like this movie's good, but it's, you know, not their best one, so I'd maybe rate it this way or that way. Or like, it's a Marvel movie, or this one's not as good as the previous one or whatever. So like, I would give it a 4 out of 5, and that's still really high in my view. And that could be something that could increase in time, that once I kind of go watch it again, now that I've kind of watched it with that pressure's now off, like, am I going to enjoy this? You know, what am I thinking of this kind of ahead of a podcast? It's quite exciting to now just think, right, it's over now, I've broken the seal, I can kind of dive back into this movie and probably watch it in the next few months, I think, and then I might put it on Letterboxd as a 5. So yep, I think it's good. And you know, a film that inspires in, you know, Scotland two white Russian themed bars, right, that are very successful, that's a pretty unique movie in my eyes. So I think that deserves many extra stars for that one.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's funny. Like I said, first time I saw this, I probably would have given it a 1. Second time I saw this, I'd probably bump it up to a 3. And then I say, like, the third, fourth time I saw it, it would probably go 4. And now, I mean, I would just go ahead and rate it a 5. And I think if I were to take my bias and my personal attachment to the film out of the equation, I would probably be with you, give it like a 4. But I think the reason I bump it up to a 5 is the absolute brilliance of the Coen brothers to sit down and write something that is so opposite what we're used to when it comes to telling a story or making a film that works and functions. The fact that they were able to break every one of those rules and still make something so absolutely brilliant, to make a comedy that I can come back to and really get something profound from each and every time, that to me just bumps it up to a 5. And I adore this movie. Like I said, it's one of my all-time like top 5 favorite comedies, if not my favorite comedy. And it was one of the things that kind of, it was a great learning experience for me as a film fan, as I was kind of learning more about films. I saw it at the perfect time, right when I was going into film school. And it's amazing to see how my tastes kind of evolved and changed. And The Big Lebowski really kicked a lot of that off. So I have a lot of personal attachment to it, but I think just even separated from that, you have to admire the Coen brothers for the gall of just sitting down and saying, all right, we're going to do something that is not going to mean anything and you're going to love it. So shut up and sit down and watch it. But Lee, thank you so much for watching this movie.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you for finally making this happen.
This is great. And if people want to find you, Lee, where can they find you on the Nerd Party Network?
Yeah, if you can't find me in the Lebowski's pub having a salted caramel white Russian, you can find me on Filibuster on the Nerd Party Network. We're in the middle of a bit of a Marvel rewatch at the moment, en route to Infinity War. So me and you are doing a few episodes of that together and apart. And also we've got some interviews and other film chat as well. So it's a good place to dive into. So and you can find me on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo as well. And we can chat about your favorite white Russian toppings.
Perfect. And I am at Yay Chandraman on Twitter, and we can talk all about the Big Lebowski, talk about the Coen brothers, because they are to this day my top favorite filmmakers of all time. But yeah, and then if you're enjoying what you're hearing, make sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or wherever you might be listening. If there is a rating system, feel free to give us whatever you feel is your honest reflection. But 5 stars is always appreciated. And again, Lee, thank you so much for being here. This was an absolute pleasure getting to talk about this movie.
I'm glad that I didn't tell you it was terrible, or else it could have been a very awkward hour of just quiet rage filling the audio track.
That's exactly what I think people are they're disappointed. I think that's what people were hoping for. Just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in. Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.